Stefan Christoff is an independent journalist and media activist with CKUT Community Radio in Montreal. Christoff traveled to the Lebanese capital of Beirut in June of this year as part of a delegation of activists with Tadamon, a Montreal-based Lebanon solidarity and independent media organization. Subsequently, he found himself in Beirut during the first days of Israel's bombing campaign of the country in July of 2006. In this CKDU interview, Christoff talks about the political context in which the current conflict is taking place, as well as the response in both Lebanon and across the globe to the targeting of civilian infrastructure by the Israeli military. This interview was recorded in Halifax for CKDU Radio on August 1st, 2006. I guess I'll just start off by asking you to describe what it is that led you to travel to Lebanon in the first place in your delegation with Tadamon, and really how this organization kind of got its start.
Tadamon is a group that formed over a year ago, and its goal was mainly to develop and establish concrete connections between movements for social and economic justice in North America and in the Middle East, the specific focus being between Beirut and Montreal. And our goal was to look at the various forms of war that exist in the Middle East. We often define war as bullets and bombs, as is happening today in Lebanon. But since the end of the 15-year civil war in Lebanon, that officially ended in 1990, with the signing of the Taif Accord, Tadamon, in our experience working on the ground in Lebanon, realized that there was more subtle forms of warfare, economic warfare, namely that huge sections of the population lived in poverty. The United Nations, before this war, the July 2006 Israeli attack on Lebanon, estimated that upwards of 35% of the country lived below the international poverty index rating. So essentially a third of the country living in poverty. So now the outbreak of war in Lebanon, Tadamon as a group has been directly involved in organizing solidarity actions and organizing to confront and oppose the position of the Canadian government, of the Conservative government of Canada, in support of the Israeli military assault on the Lebanese people.
You were in Beirut in mid-July during the first days of the bombardment. It's clear that Israel's initial attack was targeted against civilian infrastructure, most notably the one of the first airstrikes, if I'm not mistaken, took out the $500 million modern Beirut airport. Can you talk a little bit about what you saw of specific areas in the capital that were initially targeted in the first few days of Israel's bombardment?
Yeah, for sure. I was in Lebanon from the beginning of June 2006. And for the first full week of the Israeli attack on the country, I was living in downtown Beirut. So from my vantage point, especially in the later days of the week that I remained, that's the first week of the assault on the country, bombings became indiscriminate. A lot of friends, a lot of people that I knew in Lebanon were saying that there was nowhere in the capital that was safe. And bombings were becoming commonplace around many areas of the city. Now, to talk specifically about what has been attacked, what was targeted by the Israeli military, as you mentioned, the civilian infrastructure of Lebanon was severely damaged and is continuing to be severely damaged. The first strikes attacked the highways, mainly in the south of the country. There's two major cities in southern Lebanon. There's Sur and Saida. Sur is further south than Saida, and Saida is south of Beirut. The main highways surrounding both of those cities were bombed within the first 3 days of the Israeli attack on Lebanon. The bridges surrounding the cities were taken out. and also bridges surrounding the southern sections of Beirut, the capital of Lebanon. So essentially what was happening was you're seeing the isolation of the Lebanese population, especially in the south, the physical isolation, while Israel maintained its attacks on cities and towns throughout the south. People were unable to move. So at the same time, where we saw the Israeli military dropping leaflets in Arabic in the thousands, demanding that civilians leave their homes in certain areas, and this actually took place in Beirut, in the southern suburb, they were dropping leaflets demanding that people leave their homes. But particularly in the south, they were dropping similar leaflets, but the issue was that the military of Israel was demanding that Lebanese leave their homes, but it was basically a physical impossibility for people to actually leave because they had succinctly bombed every possible escape route from many of the villages and even the southern cities, again, of Sur and Saida. So, I mean, in Beirut itself, all night, all you could hear was explosions. Generally, the major assaults on the southern suburbs, known as Dahi, Dahi means suburb in Arabic, but specifically on the area called Hatr Hek, which is in the center of Dahi, the southern suburbs of Beirut, at about 3:30 in the morning, explosions would start rocking the southern suburbs. And where I was, which was in West Beirut, I was in West Beirut, actually, if you're driving, let's say on a clear day, not in the midst of war, you would take only about 15 minutes to arrive in the center of the southern suburbs where I was staying. The point being that around 3:30, they would start the bombing campaign, targeting this very densely populated area of the capital city, targeting a lot of the civilian infrastructure also of this area. They targeted also the port of Beirut in the first couple of days, and this is not in the southern suburb, but outside of the center of the city, of the center of the capital. But the point being that being in Beirut, what you witness is the realities of war. It's very difficult to describe in words. And also even watching the images that are coming across in the media, it's hard to put across the real human suffering that many Lebanese, thousands upon thousands now, are experiencing. The prime issue being displacement, the creation of internal refugees, both in the capital and throughout the country, where you have thousands upon thousands of people's homes destroyed and are being forced to flee. Essentially, what we're seeing is the collective punishment of the Lebanese population at the hands of the Israeli military.
Just, I guess, as a follow-up on that, can you talk a little bit about the issue of displacement prior to the official end of the last conflict in Lebanon? Had there been a substantial, you know, population of displacees within the south already?
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting question because actually Dahi, the southern suburbs of Beirut, it's very fair to say the vast majority of the population of the southern suburbs are actually refugees. These are refugees from southern Lebanon, from the formerly Israeli-occupied south. Well, now they're attempting to occupy it again. But it was only 6 years ago that Israel pulled back from the southern edges of Lebanon. That was in 2000, and they were forced to pull back due to the armed indigenous resistance movements of namely Hezbollah, but many other militia and armed groups also. The point being that in the southern suburbs of Beirut, you have the majority of the population who already were refugees. They were forced from their homes, a lot of them in southern Lebanon, and also in the Bakaa Valley, in the south Bakaa Valley, that's near Syria. It's on Lebanon's southeastern edge. And so you have refugees being made refugees once more. And so the internal displacement in Lebanon is actually quite incredible, and I think will define a lot of the collective memory of this war in Lebanon. I spoke with many refugees who were fleeing to central Beirut in the area that I was staying, and they were staying in open-air parks, in schools, in hospitals, and really anywhere they could find. A lot of families in Beirut opened their homes for refugees to stay in who were fleeing the bombings. And a lot of these families, of course, at the point when I spoke to them, which is into the first week of the assault on Lebanon, had already lost family members in the Israeli military campaign. I remember speaking with one family at a park in the Hamra district of Beirut, that's in central Beirut. It's called Sanaya Park. And these refugees, one of them told me, he said very directly in Arabic, he said, I have nowhere to stay today. My family has nowhere to sleep tonight. I'm in a terrible situation. Is this what Bush calls democracy in the Middle East? Is this what Bush calls democracy in Lebanon? If this is what he calls democracy, then I invite him to come and sleep in my place and really experience the quote-unquote facts on the ground in Lebanon. It summed up, I think, the feeling of a lot of the refugees who had fled to central Beirut. I think it's important to say that a lot of the people who were fleeing were very supportive of Hezbollah. I think this is something that has to be spoken about and has to be addressed, especially as the intensity of the Israeli bombing campaign increased. The support for Hezbollah in Lebanon continued to rise, even amongst sectors of the population that traditionally have not supported directly the Hezbollah movement. So what does war look like in Lebanon today? It looks like massive displacement, the forced migration of thousands of people in a very small country, actually. Lebanon is very small geographically. There's only around 4 million people in Lebanon. And there's some estimates that say that upwards of 1 million people in the country now have been displaced. So massive movements of people, and sadly also we've seen a massive civilian death toll in such a short time. Estimates now ranging between 700 and 800 people have lost their lives in this war.
Just like to talk a little bit about the issue of Hezbollah. I mean, here in Canada, as I'm sure you're well aware, Hezbollah is usually described in the media as being, well, either in regards of how best it could be neutralized or simply as just a lawless terrorist force.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's quite clear that as you mentioned, Hezbollah has a huge following within Lebanon, and which seems to extend across religious and sectarian lines. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what I guess the appeal of Hezbollah is? I mean, what exactly has been the attraction of Hezbollah for much of the population, both before and after this bombing campaign began?
Well, I think it's fair to say that after the 2000 liberation of the south of Lebanon, a lot of people who perhaps didn't directly support Hezbollah did express their respect for the armed movement. People in various political parties and across various political lines respected Hezbollah at that time because they successfully drove the Israeli military out of the south of the country. This was a cause that the vast, vast majority of Lebanon supported. All the major political figures in the country, all the major media outlets did support the fight against the Israeli occupation of the south of Lebanon. Now, that was only 6 years ago. And since that time, and Hezbollah has said this directly, since that time they have been preparing, quote-unquote, in the south of Lebanon for an Israeli offensive, preparing the military groundwork for an armed resistance. And that's what we're seeing today. And this is particularly why it has been so difficult for the Israeli forces to move from their northern border into southern Lebanon. Now, in terms of Hezbollah, Lebanon is a very complicated country politically, and what I mean by that is throughout the last 2 years, the country has undergone major political change. In February 2005, we saw the assassination of the former Prime Minister, Rafik Hariri. He's a politician that was credited for a lot of the economic and social reconstruction of the country. And then the massive street demonstrations that followed his death and the April 2005 Syrian withdrawal from the country, which saw 15,000 Syrian troops withdraw from Lebanon. Lebanon has undergone major political change. In June of that year, Lebanon held parliamentary elections. Now, those were the first elections that took place after the Syrian military withdrew from the country. And in those elections, Hezbollah won upwards of 15 seats in the Lebanese parliament. And so I think it's important to mention that, too, because Hezbollah is a very complicated movement. It's in Lebanon, it's the political party. It's a very significant political party. It runs a TV station. It runs a radio station that are widely viewed, El Manar Television, which is actually widely viewed across the Arab world, while also they maintain seats in political office. They also have their armed wing, of course, which we're seeing in action today. They have a wide-reaching social infrastructure. They run hospitals and schools in the southern suburbs of Beirut and also in the south of the country and in the Bekaa Valley. Now, today, there's mixed reactions to Hezbollah's armed activities in Lebanon. I think it's very important to mention that. There are some people I spoke to upon the initial capturing of Israeli soldiers. There was mixed reactions. A lot of people in Lebanon, mainly from the eastern part of the capital city, East Beirut, mainly aligning with what was called the opposition parliamentary bloc, which is now in power, meaning the Future Movement, which represented Rafik Hariri, also various Maronite Christian parties, were not extremely supportive of Hezbollah, and they felt that the capturing of the two soldiers took place without the consent of the nation, that it wasn't a democratic act because the population of Lebanon was not consulted. But I'd say that it's fair to say today the majority of the population is standing behind Hezbollah. This has been confirmed by the majority of professional polls that have taken place in the country, and also can be confirmed in the words of the majority of the political leaders, with the Prime Minister himself, Fuad Siniora, basically announcing this past weekend that he stands in support of the Lebanese resistance. So it's very complicated, but I think the essential thing to say and the essential thing to understand is that the future of Lebanon politically as a nation, as a country, is intimately intertwined with the future of Palestine. This will be said by many political scholars in the country. And it's a very important point because without a just solution for the Palestinian cause, without a just solution for the Palestinian refugees displaced by Israel, and there's 500,000 refugees in Lebanon, without a just solution for the Palestinian question, I really do not believe there will be a stable political future for Lebanon. The reason being is that the national identities, the Lebanese national identity and the Palestinian national identity, are intimately intertwined. And I think that what we're seeing now in terms of the Israeli assault really illustrates that. In history, if we want to look back to the Ottoman times, Lebanon and Palestine, there was no border. There was no distinction. There's a lot of cultural similarities. There's a lot of relations, family relations that span the border that now is northern Israel or southern Lebanon. So the point being that Hezbollah, I think, represents the aspirations of many Arabs in Lebanon who believe very firmly and very strongly in the justice of the Palestinian cause and also the justice of the Lebanese cause and of the voices of people in Lebanon who do not see a stable future for the country without a stable future for Palestine.
I'd just like to jump to, I guess, the efforts of Condoleezza Rice in attempting to broker a quote-unquote ceasefire. George Bush just today, I believe, dismissed the possibility of an immediate ceasefire, but it's generally reported without question within the Canadian media that Condoleezza Rice is traveling throughout the region to broker a ceasefire. There have been many criticisms of the proposed plan, particularly within the Canadian peace movement. Many see it as just basically a form of internationally recognized disarmament of Hezbollah. I'd just like to get your take on the so-called efforts of the Bush administration to broker this so-called ceasefire.
Well, I think one fact really illustrates the realities of the U.S. Administration's role in the current war in Lebanon. As we're hearing the words of Condoleezza Rice in the international press, the words of her efforts to attempt to mediate some sort of prolonged or substantial ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah. At the same time, we're hearing these diplomatic overtures, we are witnessing the facts. And one very essential fact is that all the weapons, all the bombs that Israel is now using against civilian population in Lebanon are, not all of them, but a huge portion of them are coming from the United States. There's right now political controversy taking place in Scotland because one of the Scottish airports has been requested by the United States government as a transportation base for major bombs and missiles to be flown from the United States to be used by the Israeli military. This has been widely reported in the Scottish press and also in the British press, and it's been opposed by some Scottish MPs. The point being that, you know, we hear the words of Condoleezza Rice and the U.S. administration, but their actions are very, very different. We all know, those of us who research the facts regarding the state of Israel and the ongoing conflict in the region, that Israel militarily would not be at the massive level that it is today. You know, some people estimate that it's the fourth or fifth largest military power in the world without the direct subsidy and aid of the U.S. government. They're pouring billions of dollars a year into the Israeli military. This is a fact that's openly noted by all past U.S. administrations, not only the Bush administration, but the Clinton administration before the Bush administration, and, of course, Bush senior administration. The point being that the current diplomatic overtures that are taking place, I think when we view the reaction of Lebanese on the ground, we get a good sense of how they are impacting the situation. After the massacre that took place this weekend in Hana, in southern Lebanon, this is an incident that I hope will be remembered in history, where over 70 civilians lost their lives when the Israeli military launched a missile strike on a civilian home that had been used by refugees taking shelter. Now, as that happened, there was a huge demonstration that took place in Beirut outside of the United Nations headquarters, and that's in the central part of the city. There is a huge demonstration. Thousands of people participated. That was confirmed by all the press that witnessed the event. At the demonstrations, emotions rang very high, and all the windows of the UN were smashed by Lebanese protesters voicing their outrage at the diplomatic inability for the United Nations or for Western powers such as the U.S. to broker any sort of just solution. Mainly the protesters, I think, in their actions, the Lebanese protesters this past weekend at the UN, were illustrating the fact that the United Nations today, in terms of the war in Lebanon in July 2006, has basically become impotent. They have been able to achieve nothing in terms of concretely achieving any sort of just peace for the people of Lebanon. Now, I think that an important point to underscore is that what we're witnessing today in the Middle East is a growing support for Hezbollah. The reason being that there is, of course, huge sympathy across the Arab world, from Morocco to Iraq, for the Palestinian cause. And this is one of the first acts of solidarity, direct solidarity, by an outside group, this time a Lebanese one, Hezbollah, towards the Palestinians. The Palestinians viewed this as an act of solidarity, the capturing of two Israeli military soldiers. Now, it looks like today Hezbollah militarily has been quite successful. This is the question, will Israel stop its military campaign before achieving what it stated are its military goals? The two being that Hezbollah withdraws from the border area and returns the two soldiers. It remains to be seen, but it does seem at this point that those two goals will not be achieved. And I think it's been stated very clearly by the political leader of Hezbollah, Hassan Nasrallah, that Hezbollah will not put down their weapons, especially in this time. And now with more and more major political leaders in Lebanon, including the prime minister, backing that position, it seems like an impossible goal for Israel. So they can continue to bomb and pound the civilian infrastructure and civilians themselves in the country, but this will not achieve their military and political goal for Lebanon. It seems like basically the Israeli military has entered a political and armed quagmire in southern Lebanon again, and I think will have resounding and lasting impacts on the Israeli economy, on the political perception of the country across the globe, whereas their attack on Lebanon has been condemned from all corners of this earth.
Just, I guess, in speaking about that, the condemnation, as I understand it, in Montreal, there's basically been sort of consistent demonstrations and protests of both the Palestinian and Lebanese community throughout the city, particularly focusing on Israeli embassies, as there was here in Halifax just this past weekend. Could you talk a little bit about what sort of social movement response has kind of resulted in Montreal and really how significant it's been in what you've seen since getting back?
Well, Montreal is home to one of the largest Lebanese communities in North America. Quebec also is, the province of Quebec, there's hundreds of thousands of Lebanese that live in the province. It's conservative estimates say that there is 100 to 120,000 Lebanese in the Montreal area. So the point being that there's been a massive political outrage in Montreal regarding the Israeli military assault on Lebanon. Specifically, a lot of the outrage has been directed at the Conservative government of Canada for their overt political support for the Israeli military campaign. There was a lot of criticism of the Harper government in the days after the Israeli assault on Lebanon began, and the criticism revolved around the common theme of the fact that the Harper government did not act quickly enough. They were not on their feet in dealing with the Middle East crisis, quote unquote. However, I think a lot of people in the Lebanese community in Montreal and in other corners of the world who are watching Canadian politics unfold, I think can fairly say and have stated to me that the Canadian government did act very quickly in the face of the Israeli military assault on Lebanon. They acted very quickly. Within the first day of the conflict, Stephen Harper issued a statement offering his direct political support for the Israeli military campaign, calling the Israeli response on Lebanon as civilians were losing their lives in the dozens in the first day of the Israeli assault. He was calling their campaign measured. Now, obviously, a lot of people who understand and know the realities of what is happening on the ground of Lebanon are flabbergasted at this comment. It's completely removed from reality. And I think illustrates an inherent racism in the Canadian government. Even the Lebanese Prime Minister, Fouad Siniora, he was speaking at a gathering that took place in Beirut. It was about a week into the war, and he had gathered foreign diplomats to central Beirut, where he gave a conference, a press conference, and also a presentation about the situation. And what he said was that, is the life of a Lebanese less worthy than the life of a civilian in another nation or of the citizen of another nation? Are Lebanese lives less worthy and less meaningful? Do they mean less? Fouad Siniora asked that question, the Prime Minister of Lebanon. And I think Stephen Harper here in Canada has confirmed that to him and to the current Canadian government, Lebanese lives are not worth as much as other lives. They have been defined as subhuman. The Canadian media has also played a role in this. The coverage of the major papers has been atrocious. There has been, especially of the Can-West newspapers, an editorial support for the Israeli campaign in Lebanon. Further than that, as someone who has seen firsthand what is taking place in Lebanon, very clear that their coverage is not depicting accurately whatsoever what is taking place on the ground, which is an attack on the civilian infrastructure of the country and an attack on the civilians of Lebanon, the entire nation. This is collective punishment, and this is not a hard thing to understand politically. All you have to do is read the reports issued by the Red Cross of Lebanon or even the government of Lebanon itself to understand the extent to which this is true, that the Israeli military assault on Lebanon has been an attack on the people of the country. Now, here in Canada, the Harper government has repeated its line. Even today, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Peter MacKay, continued on with the position of the Conservatives, saying that, you know, the Israeli military reserves the right to defend itself, etc. Obviously, this will outrage here in Montreal the Lebanese community, and outrages all members of the Montreal community who stand for any principles of social justice, of fundamental human rights, because the Canadian government has essentially spit in the face of anyone who believes in fundamental human rights. And their political support for Israel has provided cover for a massive military campaign that is destroying a nation.
Has there been really, I guess, an attempt to sort of organize across religious lines that aren't often crossed, within the city?
Yes. Well, there, as you mentioned, there's been successive demonstrations. Numerous demonstrations each week. This Sunday, there was a demonstration of thousands of people that was called on with around 24 hours notice. Thousands of people attended. That was the day that the Hana massacre happened. Obviously, the vast, vast majority of the Lebanese population in Montreal is standing against the military assault on their country. So that's reflected very clearly in the many events that have been organized. Last night, here in the city, there was a vigil that took place that was called on very short notice. Hundreds of people attended in the downtown of the city. So the response of the Lebanese community has been very rapid, has been very large. There was a demonstration a week into the military campaign. Some people estimated was between 10 to 15,000 people demonstrating in downtown Montreal. And these are all political actions that were organized on very short notice and mainly consisted of participation of the Lebanese community in the city. Now, it remains to be seen whether these demonstrations will have a political impact on the Conservative government of Canada. Polls indicated today that the support for Harper has dropped across the country, specifically due to his positions relating to the Middle East. Now, obviously, what a lot of community members here are saying in Montreal is that the pressure has to continue, that the political actions have to continue, as long as the Canadian government continues to support war crimes at the hands of the Israeli military in Lebanon.
You've been listening to an interview with Stefan Christophe, an independent journalist and activist with Tadamon, a Montreal-based Lebanon solidarity organization. To find out more about the work of Tadamon, visit tadamon.resist.ca. This interview was produced in Halifax for CKDU Radio. My name is Stuart Neepy.